I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington Democrats have scoffed at some of the criticisms of their income tax, but some of our predictions are already coming true. And a local school district took days to inform police and parents of credible accusations of misconduct against a coach. And the first major federal conviction against an Antifa terror cell. We'll discuss that and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We're shaking it off, okay? Shaking it out. Shaking it. Actually, that feels real nice. Nicole, are you shaking it? Okay, good. Deep breaths in and out. Deep breaths in and out. We're putting the disappointment of the last few weeks behind us. I mean, we're still disappointed, but we're going to turn disappointment into anger, and we're going to continue to do what needs to be done. The legislative session that happened in Washington State was about as bad as it gets. We've got an income tax that's racing toward implementation in Washington State. It's going to result in an upheaval of our state's tax structure and economy, and it's not going to be good. But we can sit here and we can cry about it. We can whine about it. We can fret and talk about leaving the state, or we can fight. And I think this is really the last stand. Is Custer's last stand? Is that what it is? Washington's last stand. I like that. Was it Custer's last stand? I don't know. Maybe I misremember history. But we're going to do away with all the moping, okay? And it is our job on this show to push back against lies that are being told to you. And that's what we're going to continue to do. There are a lot of points in this process where politicians, Democrats in Washington State, have scoffed at some of the predictions that we've made and some of the criticisms that we've made about this proposal. And Bob Ferguson, he did an interview with TVW after the income tax was officially passed and we're awaiting his signature on it. And he scoffed at one of the predictions that we've made and many people have made about this so-called millionaire's tax.
You've also said that you do not support lowering the threshold.
Correct.
That's a frequent refrain from critics of the of this proposal.
Sure.
So in a year or 2 years, if you're delivered a bill and it would lower that threshold below where it is today, would you sign it?
Yeah, I've been clear on that I oppose lowering it. And it shows the weakness in the opponents, right? I watch much of the floor debate. The weakness of their argument is be afraid of something that's not actually in the bill. Okay, the bill has it as a millionaire's tax, and it goes up for inflation every single year, right? The amount of who pays it, right, to address that as well. So my feeling is someone's got a weak argument when their main argument is something that's not actually in the bill. Be afraid of something that could happen sometime in the future.
The more incredulous he acts, the more convinced I am that that's the plan. And we know that's the plan. I mean, that has, I laid it out very perfectly on Thursday's show. I don't need to do it again. They have been planning for this moment and putting everything in place to try to get this unconstitutional income tax to stick for years, the better part of 10 years. And the more indignant he acts, the more confident I am that we're correct. So we can scoff all he wants. But they've scoffed about other things. For instance, I asked Bob Ferguson about the issue of the millionaire's tax impacting free agency.
Most states have an income tax. And so football players still play in states where there is an income tax.
Yeah, Brandy. A lot of states have an income tax. They still have football teams. And of course, that's disingenuous because while they might have an income tax, it's much lower than 9.9%. And in Washington State, we have a ton of other taxes that impact people specifically at higher income brackets, like professional football players. And so he scoffed at that. But then what happened over the weekend? Seahawks general manager John Schneider reiterated exactly what I said.
Hey, John, always challenges for you and possibly a state tax. Is that something that comes into play a little bit because of, you know, a 10% hit, you know, and you haven't had that in the past?
It's been a huge, you know, the agents were kind of, a bunch of agents yesterday texting me like, hey, can't use that anymore, buddy, you know. But like it is, I think it is for, you know, all the pro teams here, you know, in town. It's always been a huge attraction, you know, especially competing with, you know, the California teams. It's been a big deal for us. So, it's going to sting. I mean, it's going to, from a recruiting standpoint and, you know, what that looks like and you know, all I'm sure like Mike Reinfeld and, you know, Mickey Loomis and all the cap guys that have been here before too are looking at this, you know, like, dang, it's gonna sting. There's no question about it.
It's going to sting. There's no question about it. You don't have to be a sports expert to understand that. Yet Bob Ferguson scoffed at it. And look at what is turning out to be very true. The other thing that Democrats have scoffed at is the idea of capital flight.
The idea that we have capital flight, I have not seen any evidence of that whatsoever.
There's a myth floating around today and yesterday.
A myth.
That capital will leave Washington. This whole concept of capital flight.
They treat people like they're genuinely stupid. Because, of course, capital flight has already happened. Jeff Bezos left over the capital gains tax. He certainly wasn't the only one. And then as soon as the income tax passed the House and the Senate, what happened? Well, all these business owners started to say, well, I guess I'll leave. One of them was our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital.
Already looking for real estate. And I'm looking at either Idaho or Arizona at this point.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, what does she call it, a myth? Oh, I haven't seen any evidence of it. Well, here's the evidence, right? And Zach Abraham is far from the only one. But I think, you know, for Zach, it's not easy to say goodbye. This is where he's from. And this is where he wanted to live out his life with his family.
I feel a sense of grief about this, honestly, because first of all, anybody that knows me knows that I'm not one to issue idle threats. So I'm for better or worse, I'm a man of my word. I will not stay here and pay that tax. I promise you that full tilt. But I was born here.
Yeah.
I own a home on a bay that I wanted to live on since I was 14 years old, that I wanted to raise my children on. I love it here. And here's the deal. I don't like paying taxes, but I'm okay doing it. And I've been given more than I need, and I'm happy to help out under two conditions. Don't use my funds in a way to hurt me and hurt those that I love and hurt things that I hold dear, like basic morality. And don't slap me in the face at the same time and tell me I'm the problem.
Yeah, you want to use my tax money to do things that are fantastic for the populace? I'm going to have less of a problem with that. You want to take my earnings, take my money, sometimes to the tune of 40% or more, depending how much money you make. And then you want to turn it around and use it to keep secrets from parents in education. You want to turn it around. You want to turn around and use it to write big fat government contracts to your cronies and allies in the Washington Education Association. You want to turn around and use it to give laser hair removal and boob jobs to transgender prison inmates. That's where I draw the line. And it turns out that's where a lot of Washington businesses draw the line. And our friend at Bulwark Capital isn't the only one. Far from it. Of course, we talked about Howard Schultz fleeing to Miami to join Jeff Bezos and soaking up the sun. This was one that came down over the weekend. The CEO of Moment Cameras, which is a Seattle-based company, Mark Barrows, he took to social media and says, I've already left. And now my company is also going to be leaving this month. He said, after 40 years born and raised, I left Washington. Moment is leaving this month as well. I'm not even a millionaire affected by this tax. But when you add up all the costs to run a business in Washington, we cannot afford it. You can build a remote team and reopen in Wyoming, removing all those costs. He talked about how beautiful Washington is, of course. But there comes a point where it is covered up by an awful lot of nonsense. He said of some of the taxes that he's had to contend with that have made it very difficult to continue to live here and run a business here. The high gas taxes, sales taxes, property taxes, capital gains tax, the high estate tax, the housing prices. He says the food costs are unreal. He also says as far as businesses are concerned, all the capital has dried up. People with wealth aren't investing here. He says super high salaries for tech talent have made it impossible to compete. B&O tax, which is paid on gross receipts, sales and use taxes, all these things. You add that up and they want to have this disingenuous argument about, oh, well, most states have an income tax. This is just an income tax. Okay, it's not just an income tax. It's unconstitutional. It's an income tax that targets people who innovate, who build, who create jobs. But that aside, they want to act like it's the only tax they've ever implemented. And of course, that's not the case. There's a million taxes that add up. You walk out the door and you're nickel and dime to death by the government that's already taken your money. It's absolutely absurd. On Sundays with Subscribers, we had on a theme here that I think is really important to point out. These aren't people who came here and dabbled, who came here and took advantage of some sort of tax breaks when things were more advantageous, and now they're just waving goodbye and going back to from whence they came. No, Zach Abraham is from here. He's going to have to pull his kids out of school and leave. Mark Barrows, from here, been here 40 years, born and raised in Washington. You think it's easy for him to leave? Same with Jesse Proudman, who we had on Sundays with Subscribers this week, tech entrepreneur. He told me an awesome story about, he's born and raised in Tacoma, tells me the story about being 13 years old. He wanted to buy a Walkman, and his parents said, well, you better go find a way to find enough money to get a Walkman. And he was, I mean, he was a 13-year-old tech entrepreneur. And he went out there and he sold a website for like $100 to his local dentist. He stayed here. He built three businesses here, including his latest, Venice AI. He's leaving.
It's not just the government itself. It's sort of the entire climate around sort of entrepreneurial endeavors mm-hmm. has shifted
yeah.
in sort of social conversation and then manifested into policy. Again, sort of when I was growing up, I just remember this spirit of like picking yourself up on your by the bootstraps, and you have optionality and you can build anything if you sort of put enough hard effort and work behind it. And like no longer is that a thing. Now it's tax the rich, and like they've mm-hmm. done something to get ahead that we don't have access to. And like sure, there are all kinds of social roadblocks that exist in the world. Like we can argue about that all day long, but at the end of the day, like I think there's something very honorable about people that put the effort in to kind of build something, and it's suddenly now become sort of a negative attribute.
Yeah.
And then the capital gains tax was the first time that manifested itself into policy. Like the concept that you've worked hard and you've built an asset and you've now elected to sell that asset, you've chosen to sell that asset. And by making that choice, we suddenly have the right to take a big portion of it from you. That was really offensive to me. And you know, I'm not an anti-tax guy. Like I think the government needs a way to pay for its operations. And our state does, you could argue, has a regressive tax structure. But there's a structure to change that.
Yeah.
You know, there's a way to change that. It's clearly laid out in the Constitution. And so what's been offensive to me at this whole process is that instead of trying to actually change the structure of the law, we're trying to look for all these loopholes.
Yeah.
And then we're layering on all these miscellaneous fees. And so part of the research I was doing this week was looking at all of the different taxes that we have and how yeah. they all layer on between gross receipts, B&O tax.
Yeah.
So I don't, like, for people that don't know, when you run a business in the city of Seattle, you're paying tax on your top line revenue.
Which should be illegal.
Right. Like
it should be illegal.
You could make no money.
Yeah.
You literally are a startup. You're making no money. And you're paying a top line tax on the revenue that you generate, which is unbelievable. You've got gas taxes, you've got the state taxes, you've got the sales taxes, which are already like highest in the country. Mm-hmm. And then now you've got capital gains tax and these income taxes. When it's all layered on, like we effectively have become the highest tax state in the country. And so we talk about this reality of like people aren't going to leave, they want to be here. This is a great place to start companies. Like, it's not when it's the highest tax state in the country, and then everything else we have to deal with. Like, it's a silly combination.
Yeah, even though you're from here, if when you set out to do all this, if the climate had been what it is today, would you have left?
We will leave right now. Like,
yeah.
our plan. You know, I have two kids in school right now. I would love for them to finish school here.
Mm-hmm.
I love the state. I love being here, but it is not economically viable if this tax day is for me to continue to be here in this state.
Yeah, so not only are we scaring away businesses, we're scaring away lifelong Washingtonians who invested here, decided I'm going to innovate here, I'm going to create jobs here, I'm going to give back to my community where I was born and raised. And so if we're keeping score here, which I think we should, they scoffed at my question about how this will impact free agency for the Seahawks. The Seahawks says this will impact free agency. They scoffed at the idea of this will lead to capital flight. Immediately led to capital flight. So I'm 2 for 2. And Washington Democrats and Bob Ferguson are 0 for 2. So when I tell you that this will lead to an income tax on everyone within 6 years, who are you going to believe? You're going to believe the people that continue to lie to you about this policy and lied to you as they pushed it through? Or are you going to believe me? Now, look, I think be skeptical of everyone, right? Be skeptical of everyone. Go out there, consume information, make a decision on your own. But I'm 2 for 2 on this, and they're 0 for 2, and they've told many more lies throughout this process. And they won't be, well, they will not be able to hide. I talk about this all the time with crime statistics. You can fudge a lot of numbers on crime statistics, and you can make it look like you have a decline in crime when really your policing has gotten so abysmal because you've defunded the police that people aren't reporting crimes anymore, right? You can be like, wow, property crime went down 70%. It's like, no, you made people wait 12 hours for a police response, so they just stopped reporting crime. But the one number that you can't fudge in crime statistics is what? Homicide. You got a body, it's a body. Someone was killed, they were killed. So when you look at murder rates, that's the most accurate reflection of where crime is at in a society. The thing that Democrats will not be able to hide here is jobs. They will not be able to hide a business leaving. Either they're here or they're not. So it's a pretty hard statistic to fudge. So we'll know the impact that this has. And we have a couple years now before it goes into effect. There's going to be a legal battle that I'm sure we'll hear about by the end of the week. There's going to be an initiative fight, which I'm sure we'll hear about by the end of the week, if not maybe early next week. And we're going to be able to track all these things and call them out on their lies in real time. There's this great website. I wish I knew who started this. I don't. But it is leftwashington.org. Leftwashington.org. And you can submit, hey, my business is leaving Washington. Here's how many jobs I'm taking with me. And people are already doing this. 54 since it was officially passed have submitted it for verification that they're taking jobs. So far, 54 companies, 11,848 jobs, an estimated loss in tax revenue of $165 million a year in the course of like a week. So we're going to know in real time the financial impact that this is going to have on the state of Washington. One other conversation I want to have. Like, we're all in on fighting this. I think it's the last stand for Washington State and for people with common sense. I continue to be disappointed by some members of the business community who don't seem up to the task. And look, that's your own, you're signing your own exit, essentially. You're signing your own fate. And it's not so much individual business owners, but I think the entities that represent business owners need to get down in the mud and need to be willing to fight just as aggressively as everyone else. I was incredibly disappointed with a statement that was put out by Washington Roundtable, which is basically an umbrella group for all these chambers of commerce across the state of Washington, like Bellevue and Seattle, et cetera. And the new president of Washington Roundtable is Rachel Smith, who I like Rachel, I know Rachel, but she seems to be very willing to cozy up to progressives and try to sort of keep one foot in with the progressives. I criticized her because she made some personal donations to some Democratic candidates. I think Bob Ferguson was one of them. But listen to this statement. After the passage of the income tax on millionaires, which will devastate Washington businesses, quote, with the House and Senate having passed the first ever income tax in Washington state and Governor Ferguson having indicated he will sign it, the business community continues to urge state leaders to work toward a sustainably managed budget and a tax code that will ensure Washington's competitiveness. Okay, a little milk toast. Here's the quote directly from Rachel Smith. During this legislative session, we heard legislators talking more about issues the employer community has long been focused on: economic competitiveness, long-term budget sustainability, and a better tax code for Washington businesses and residents. Important provisions adopted this year begin to orient the state in that direction, including repeal of last year's sales tax on services, reduction of the estate tax, and what we expect will be additional steps to support budget sustainability. As we have said before, we see this as the beginning, not the end, of real, earnest work to implement the changes Washington needs. It is imperative that this work happen quickly. What are you talking about? This is the beginning, not the end, of real, earnest work to implement the changes Washington needs? What are you, genuinely, that looks like a statement that a socialist put out. That looks like a statement from a socialist celebrating an income tax. And I know that you're trying to maybe say that, oh, there were some other good things that came along with that, and if we right the ship, maybe we... No. That sounds like a statement celebrating what they did. And that is troubling. As the leader of basically the business community statewide, that is troubling, and it almost makes me want to not fight for businesses. I mean, I'm going to. I'm going to fight for my businesses. I'm going to fight for the businesses owned by the sponsors of the show. I'm going to fight for businesses owned by all of you. But I'm sorry, you need somebody with a whole hell of a lot more fight than that to push back against what's happening in Washington State right now. Now, I will say John Scholes with the Downtown Seattle Association, he, maybe more than any other business leader in the state, needs to maintain some semblance of a working relationship with the socialists. The mayor of Seattle is a socialist. So I understand that he's like, this is the hand that voters gave us. This is the hand we were dealt. So I can't necessarily go scorched earth on the socialist because then maybe she's not going to work with us on anything. But I thought he did a good job. We talked about the State of Downtown speech he gave last week. We just hadn't seen the video of it, and they finally released the video of it. And I thought he did a pretty good job at laying out the losses that the city of Seattle is suffering. I mean, we know that there's been job losses in Seattle and job growth in Bellevue, which has far friendlier business policies. He talked about some of the reasons why.
In total, over the last 3 years or so, there's $1 billion in new taxes that employers based in the city of Seattle are paying that they weren't paying 5 years ago, and that they're not paying in Bellevue and other parts of our region. This, along with hybrid work and some of the continued shifts in the tech economy, has contributed to an office vacancy rate in downtown Seattle of plus 30%, a historic number.
30, more than 30% of the office space. You look at the skyline in Seattle, as we've talked about, more than 30% of the office space is vacant. I'll tell you what, I mention this all the time because just from personal experience, when I was shopping for office space for the studio, you look at Bellevue, you look at the east side, you look at Seattle. Seattle's like some places $17, $16, $17 a square foot. If you've ever leased office space, that is dirt cheap and it's only getting cheaper. In Bellevue, you might have to pay $60 a square foot. But I still didn't choose Seattle. Why didn't I choose Seattle? Because I'm like, I could have this office space, pennies on the dollar, but I also have to deal with all the other issues. So Seattle doesn't have a lot going for it right now. And then he talks about, so why should you care? Why should citizens and voters in Seattle care if there's empty office space? Here's what he says about that.
And this reality is driving down the value of commercial property in our city, and particularly in downtown, driving down the value of office buildings. The 10 buildings that were worth the most in 2022 lost more than half their value. So that reality of the commercial values declining in our downtown, in a city that is heavily dependent on property taxes, that has put property taxes for universal preschool and for transportation and for education, and we will have a library levy on the ballot. This is a way in which we've raised revenue through the property tax. The reality of a declining tax base on the commercial side shifts the tax burden to renters, owners, and small businesses through their triple net leases.
It is not rocket science. This stuff is so simple, which is why it's intolerable that the governor of our state either doesn't understand it or understands it and chooses to ignore it. And the party that has complete and total control in the state either doesn't understand it or, worse, understands it and chooses to ignore it. It's the same concept that he talked about there. Why should we care? Well, the value of all these buildings has plummeted, so they're going to bring in less revenue and property taxes, but they're not going to cut spending. So they're going to come to all of you for the lost revenue and property taxes. They're going to jack up your property taxes for your house or however else they're going to come to you and get money. Same exact thing with what's happening with the mass exodus of businesses. That website that I pointed out that's tracking, and this is just the ones that have reported it so far, $165 million in lost tax revenue for the state in the matter of like a week. You think they're going to go into the budget and say, well, where can we cut $165 million in spending? Of course not. They won't even cut the spending on laser hair removal for transgender prison inmates. They're not cutting spending. So they're going to have to find that $165 million somewhere else. Where do you think they're going to find it? They're going to find it in your pocket. It's coming from your pocket. So what they say they want to do, tax the rich, punish the rich, it has the opposite of the intended impact because the rich can leave. The rich will leave. And so they're just hurting the poor and middle class. And that is the message that John Scholes drove home.
These taxes that have been proposed and adopted over the last 3 or 4 years have been articulated as progressive revenue. But let me tell you the results of what is happening here, of this massive tax shift to renters, to homeowners, to small businesses in the city of Seattle. There's nothing progressive about that. And that has been the effect. And I will say, we don't need more business taxes in Seattle. We need more businesses in Seattle paying taxes. That's how we strengthen the tax base. We fill these vacant storefronts. We fill the vacant floors in our office buildings. We drive up those commercial values. We take some of the burden off of renters and owners and small business. We grow the pie. We create jobs. We create opportunities.
Again, not hard. I could spend 5 minutes with a kindergartner, explain this to them, and they can make better decisions than Governor Bob Ferguson is making right now. Genuinely embarrassing. But again, the pity party's over. My state of depression from last week has thoroughly weared off, and I'm ready for the fight ahead, and what a fight it's going to be. All right, we're going to switch gears coming up next, in case you're sick of hearing about the income tax for the time being. I mean, we're going to be talking a lot about it from now until November, so buckle up, buttercups. We have a disturbing story out of the Tumwater, Washington School District, another example of schools keeping secrets on something pretty serious from parents and from police, at least for a couple days. So we'll dive into that. First, speaking of the business climate in Washington State, and let me just say something. I'm going to do an ad read here, but this is kind of separate from that. I'm very worried as well. I mean, we have our business. I feel like our revenue stream is pretty secure and can withstand a lot of ups and downs. You know, occasionally we have somebody who says, hey, I have to cancel my undivided subscription, just like the cost of gas and times are tough. And I always totally understand that. But, you know, we've built a pretty good business model. We get like half of our revenue from subscriptions, half of our revenue from advertisers, and it allows us to weather the storm. But to say that I'm not concerned about the business climate and our advertisers and how they're doing, and they're, because this is a luxury for them. You know, they spend money on marketing. They choose to spend it on our show, you know, in other places as well. But, you know, if they're not making as much money, if they're having to pay more money in taxes, I'm concerned, of course. You know, because we could lose one advertiser, but if you start to lose multiple advertisers over a business climate, that's when the show's in real jeopardy. And so that is something that I think about all the time. It is something that impacts us. And so one of the things that I would say is if you're able to and you're getting some of these things done anyway, as we talk about and, you know, do our reads and our ads that pay for the show, support the businesses that support our show. You know, we're trying to get out there and do the message and do all these things and fight back about what's happening. But, you know, the advertisers are a big part of that. So that is a personal plea for me to use. Support the businesses that support our show. I talked to, on the business climate, First Mark Insurance CEO Dave Taylor. Not only do they do personal insurance, we use them at our house, car, all those things at home, but we also get undivided insurance through First Mark Insurance. And we talked to Dave Taylor a little bit about businesses struggling with overall costs right now.
It's tough on business owners, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, we have seen in the last 3 years, we've seen really the personal lines industry. We've seen rates go up significantly in there, and those have started to level off again. I don't want to give you the sign that they're coming down, because they don't ever come down, but they're leveling off. Business has still continued to increase, and we're waiting for that leveling off to happen there. We're hopeful that this will be a year where it starts to level off.
Yeah, and I think a nice thing about using First Mark Insurance for your business insurance is they're a local business too. So they know the climate, they know what you're going through, they know how important it is to save you money, but also make sure you have insurance to cover you in the event that the unthinkable happens. So go to firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So take the First Mark challenge, whether it's for your personal insurance or business insurance, and they'll come back with their recommendations. And they're always going to tell you to do what's best for you, not what's best for anyone else, including their own business model. So First Mark Insurance. .com. All right. Disturbing story, which we'll get back into. So because of the income tax and all that that happened, I think there hasn't been as much conversation about the two initiatives that are already going to the ballot in November. So there's the initiative to protect girls' sports and the initiative to restore parental rights. One of the key aspects of the initiative to restore parental rights is to make sure that schools aren't keeping secrets from parents, is to make sure that schools have a mandate to tell parents about things that happen at school within a given period of time, and that you don't have this sort of cone of secrecy. And this story illustrates perfectly why that initiative is necessary. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So credit here to our friend Alicia Perkins at OSD Rescue. And I will warn you, you know, we're going to get into some depictions of allegations of child abuse or sexual misconduct, rather. And so I just want to warn you, we'll try not to be too graphic in our depictions, but some of it's pretty gross to listen to. So this is from OSD Rescue, Alicia's Substack. Black Hills coach arrested for sexual misconduct with 15-year-old student tells police he, quote, needs help. So we're talking about Black Hills High School in the Tumwater School District. And the district employee at the center of this is an assistant wrestling coach. So here's what happened. According to a police report, school security camera footage was reviewed, which showed this coach, Lee, acting as a practice partner with the 15-year-old female wrestler. He's accused of becoming visibly aroused and biting the student on the shoulder. He's also accused of grabbing and gliding his hands over her thighs and buttocks and interlocking hands. He admits to getting an erection once or twice while wrestling with the student, which could be seen by others in the vicinity. He claims he would, quote, do his best to hide it. He also admits to biting the student, which he referred to as a playful bite. The student also reported that during a district wrestling meet on February 14th, Lee engaged in sexually explicit conversation with her while sitting in the stands. Lee allegedly discussed pornography and told the student he would do her if she were a couple years older. The police report also states that Lee talked about masturbation, other sexually explicit content, such as having sex with multiple girls, and making references to his genitals. And Nicole, can you give me his first name too? I want to make sure that I give people his full name. So that's obviously pretty disturbing. So here you have a coach. There's video they reviewed. He's acting as a partner for this female wrestler, nibbles her, calls it a playful bite on the shoulder, is allegedly running his hands over her thighs and buttocks, and was getting an erection multiple times. I'm sorry, but if you're an adult male wrestling coach, and at any point in that process you start to get an erection, that's disturbing, but you should also probably go somewhere else. But it just like carries on. So the timeline here is what's really disturbing in all of this. Well, no, the allegations are disturbing. But again, when something like that happens and there's a credible allegation, police need to be notified immediately and parents need to be notified very shortly after that. I mean, that is such common sense. And the idea that it happens time and time again, where there's this sort of cone of secrecy, and they only tell parents when they feel like they absolutely have to tell parents. Howard Lee is the assistant coach's name. Howard Skip Lee. So it says, on February 25th, Tumwater School District's human resource director, Wendy Bromley, emailed Officer Stouffer, the district school resource officer, stating she had received a report of a coach behaving inappropriately with a female wrestler. Emails show this report came from the school athletic director on February 19th. Okay? So first of all, just note that date. So the athletic director told the human resource person February 19th, and she only notified police through the resource officer February 25th, 6 days later. But they knew even before that. Allegations about Lee were first brought to the head wrestling coach on February 17th by teammates of the alleged victim, a 15-year-old female wrestler. So February 17th, is when a staff member of the district, in this case, the head wrestling coach, is made aware of these allegations by teammates. You are a mandatory reporter. Now, within, you know, it looks like 2 days, the school athletic director was aware. We don't know if the head coach told him immediately, if he waited till the 19th, we don't know. But we know the athletic director on February 19th informed at some point the school's human resource officer on February 25th. Is when she called the police finally. So who in there dropped the ball where it took from February 17th to February 25th, 8 days, to notify police of these allegations? And by the way, it was teammates who told the story to the wrestling coach, but on February 19th, the student herself, the victim, confirmed that something inappropriate had indeed happened. It says Lee was notified the same day he was not to attend practice, be on school property, or contact any coaches or athletes in the wrestling program. So they knew pretty early on that this was serious enough to say, don't come to practice, don't talk to students, don't talk to staff, we're looking into it. Yet it took them at least 6 days, if not 8 full days, from that point where they realized they had a credible allegation to get the police involved. Absolutely inappropriate. February 25th is when a formal police investigation began. Howard Skip Lee was arrested on March 5th, 2026 on charges of fourth degree assault with sexual motivation and communication with a minor for immoral purposes involving the 15-year-old student. And look, I understand a police investigation takes some time to get enough evidence to charge and to arrest. So I'm not as concerned with the delay from February 25th to March 5th as they're building a case. He was already told you can't come to the school, you can't come to practice, you can't be around the alleged victim. So I'm not as concerned with that. What I'm concerned about are the 6 to 8 days, let's go with 8, from the point when any staffer at the district became aware of the allegations and to when police were looped in. That should take 10 minutes. That should take 10 minutes. I have a credible allegation. I'm going to inform my supervisor. We're going to call the police. There's no reason not to. So here's the real kicker with parents. Arrest happens March 5th. When do you think parents were notified during this whole process? March 13th. Parents were notified 3 days ago. First report comes up February 17th. Parents weren't notified until March 13th. What do you think happened here? Oh, it's because Alicia Perkins reached out for comment. They weren't going to say jack to parents. We see this all the time. They were not going to say anything because they thought they could bury it. But then Alicia Perkins reached out for her story and they said, well, now our hands are forced. Unacceptable. It says, Dear Tumwater School District families, you may see information in the media regarding a recent incident connected to one of our school athletic programs. While there are limits to what we can share due to student privacy protections and an ongoing law enforcement investigation, we want to communicate with you in the spirit of transparency and to ensure our community that the district took swift action to protect the safety and well-being of our students and school community. First of all, you didn't take swift action. We know that's a lie. And you're reaching out in the spirit of transparency, but only because, as you note, the information might come out in the media? Now, I don't believe, I'm not crazy about all, you know, I don't believe that immediately the school needs to put out an email to parents. Like, I don't believe that that email has to come on February 17th. I don't even believe necessarily it has to come out on February 19th. But the moment police are involved and the moment that you decided that it was credible enough for him not to be at practices and not to be on Tumwater School District property, which they say was February 19th, the moment you ban him from school property is the moment that you contact parents. So in this case, that would have been about 48 hours from the original allegation. And why is it important to contact parents, even if it's parents of students who aren't the female wrestler in question? Because then police can find out and parents can ask to have conversations with their kids. Any, I would say 99.9% of parents, upon learning that information, if they have a student who is in the same school as the staff member, who has any sort of interactions with the staff member, that parent is going to sit their child down. They're going to talk to him about this. And they're going to say, do you have any concerns? Did he ever act inappropriately towards you? But instead, they delay it. They don't tell parents. They don't tell parents. They don't tell parents. They find out the media's on to them. They tell parents. Should be criminal. It should be criminal to keep parents in the dark. There was also one other weird thing that happened. And this is according to Alicia Perkins, who got the documentation on this case. We're trying to, and we're reaching out to the police department to see why this letter even exists, because I think there's a lot of problems with it. But on March 5th, according to Alicia Perkins, police allowed this assistant coach the opportunity to write an apology letter to those affected by his actions. He submitted the following handwritten letter addressed to the student, apologizing for crossing the line. Who the hell's idea was it to allow someone who's accused of sexual misconduct against a minor to write them a letter? He should have no contact with her whatsoever. He should have no contact with the girls on that team whatsoever. So we're getting to the bottom of who the hell thought it was a good idea to allow him to write a letter to the child he's accused of engaging in sexual misconduct against. In the letter, he says, I realize I have crossed a line with the coach-player relationship regarding conversations that we have had. My intentions were never to cross that line, and for this, I am very sorry to have done that. This is something I do take very serious and it will not happen again to you or anyone else. I only seek to help athletes do their best at the sport they're competing in and create a positive team environment. I will do better and get any help that I need. I apologize again and hope that this will turn into something positive for everyone involved. Well, Skip Lee, I don't think it's going to turn into something positive for you. I can guarantee you it's not going to turn into something positive for the young athlete you're accused of groping and saying sexually inappropriate things to. And clearly, it's not something that's going to turn out positively for parents. Because as far as the school district is concerned, parents are the last ones who deserve to know. They'll keep a secret from parents as long as they can get away with it. And thank God for people, independent journalists like Alicia Perkins, who, without her doing this story, who knows? Maybe the parents never get that email. That's wrong. It has to change. Stop keeping secrets from parents. It's why I am in full support of the two Let's Go Washington initiatives that are going to be on the ballot in November. That segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. Absolutely insane. And the legislature didn't take action. The legislature could have passed both those initiatives into law this session. They chose to not even give them hearings. So the majority party doesn't want school districts to have to tell parents about a dang thing. All right, coming up next, probably the best written dissent in the history of law in the United States of America. And has to do with a case that originated right here in Washington State. We'll get to it first. Could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? Are you concerned with what's happening in Iran and oil prices and all of that? Totally legitimate thing to be worried about. Our friend Zach Abraham is going to be talking about all of it coming up at his free live webinar, April 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Bulwark has a jam-packed schedule for the webinar to help you cut through the market noise, AI, crypto tech, and the real fundamentals of value investing. They'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific, totally free. Register now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. If you're not able to make it, you can schedule your own personal Know Your Risk portfolio review at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And while you're there, subscribe to Zach's daily market recap, a good way to keep in touch or keep updated on everything that's happening that could be impacting your retirement portfolio. Again, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. Children, shield your ears. The phrase swinging dick is really not a phrase I expected to read in a federal court opinion, but here we are. All right, you'll recall the Olympus Spa case. This originated out of the Olympus Spa in Linwood, Washington. It is a traditional Korean spa, and it involves this trans activist, Haven Wilvich. As you can tell, because you have eyes, Haven is a boy. Haven's a man. But Haven wanted to go into a nude women's spa. And the people in the nude women's spa, real women, were highly uncomfortable by that. And the Olympus Spa, which is run by traditional religious Koreans, said, we're not comfortable with this either. And so the spa wanted to sue the Washington State Human Rights Commission because the Human Rights Commission told the spa, you can't do that. Basically, you have to serve people based on their desire, gender, ideology, even if this is a fully intact male and is going to be nude around women who think they're coming into a spa where they can feel comfortable because they're around other women. And then they've got to see someone's penis. And that's totally inappropriate. But the Human Rights Commission said, no, you have to do it. You have to allow it. And a court of appeals, or the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, first and foremost, ruled against Olympus Spa and said, nope, you can't sue the Human Rights Commission. Sorry. So that was sent to the Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, which unfortunately has upheld the ruling. So it says the Human Rights Commission's enforcement action against Olympus Spa was a straightforward application of Washington's statutory scheme, which prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender expression or identity in places of public accommodation. As applied, the statute does not abridge the spa's right to free speech, free exercise, or free association. We affirm the district court's dismissal of the complaint. So the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth District saying, no, the state of Washington and the Human Rights Commission in Washington was applying state statute for Olympus Spa in a way that did not violate their First Amendment rights. But, however, there was a scathing dissent. So not all of the Ninth Circuit judges agreed with this. So writing the dissent was Judge Lawrence Van Dyke, and it is delicious. He says, and again, forgive my language, but I am reading from an official court document, so I'm not going to apologize too much. He says, this case is about swinging dick. The Christian owners of Olympus Spa, a traditional Korean women-only nude spa, understandably don't want them in their spa. Their female employees and female clients don't want them in their spa either. But Washington State insists on them. And now so does the Ninth Circuit. You may think that swinging dicks shouldn't appear in a judicial opinion. You're not wrong. But as much as you might understandably be shocked and displeased to merely encounter that phrase in this opinion, I hope we all can agree that it is far more jarring for the unsuspecting and exposed women at Olympus Spa, some as young as 13, to be visually assaulted by the real thing. Sometimes it feels like the supposed adults in the room have collectively lost their minds. Woke regulators and complicit judges seem entirely willing, even eager, to ignore the consequences that their Frankenstein social experiments impose on real women and young girls. Yet if harmful and unfortunate consequences were all this case was about, we'd have to shrug and say, that's what comes with living in a democracy. Unless the Constitution is implicated, we get what we voted for, good and hard. Oh my God, this judge. And he's making such a valid point, because he's saying, like, yeah, it might be jarring in a judicial opinion, in this case a dissent, to see the phrase swinging dicks used. But he's saying, imagine how jarring and offensive it is for the women in the spa. Imagine how jarring and offensive it is for the young kids, 13 years old, who are in the spa, nude, who expect to be around women only. And the idea that their rights, the rights of this man, come before the rights of the women in the spa, the rights of a 13-year-old who might be in the spa with her mom for a spa day, come before the rights of the Christians who operate the spa, is absolutely insane. But that's the point that we're at. And apparently that's the point that the Ninth Circuit is at. The rights of the guy with a swinging D come before the rights of women to feel safe and secure in a space that they thought was female only. Unreal. I hope at some point we can get past this. Is this Haven still at UW, by the way?
Yeah.
Still a UW employee? Oh, yes. Haven Wilvich, she, her, Social Work and Criminal Justice, the School of Social Work and Criminal Justice Program Coordinator. I don't want Haven anywhere near social work nor criminal justice, to be quite frank. And it's just, you look, there are a million spas you can go to that aren't nude, that both genders can go in, but to choose specifically, this was an effort to try to get this legal battle, obviously, but as a man fully intact, to choose specifically a spa where women are traditionally nude is disgusting. It's truly, truly disgusting. All right, coming up next, major story that has local implications, the first ever mass federal conviction of an Antifa terror cell. We'll dive into it. Great reporting by our friend Andy Ngo. First, as you saw over the weekend, man, the weather can change rapidly. I am so sad. We had all these blue, the flower bushes were in bloom, and our hedges out in front of our house were green, looking great. And then the snow.
Yeah, my daffodils.
Oh my gosh.
Don't look happy.
Yes, I'm looking at these like crushed flowers and I'm so sad because I was like, wow, and everything's green. And then the snow. So I was out there. I had a broom. I was brooming off the bushes because I'm like, otherwise, wow, when the snow melts, they're going to be like, hello, what happened? It was really depressing. But it shows you that you might think that we're into spring and then winter hits. And so you want to make sure that your home is properly prepared for those sudden changes in weather. And I think the roof is a big thing. The last thing you want is to find out that your roof is failing in a snowstorm like the one we had this weekend. So get in touch with our friends at Valentine Roofing, and they actually have a fantastic promo going on just through the end of March, where if you get a new roof, they have then a full year of maintenance covered for you. So new roof, free year of maintenance. So you can be rest assured that your new roof is being taken care of. Professional care to keep your new roof looking its best. Plus, they have flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month. And of course, you get the Valentine experience guaranteed with every project. Seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, extra mile service. No surprise, Valentine Roofing, trusted across the Puget Sound. Best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest 3 years in a row. 2025, best roofing company in the Seattle Times, best in the Pacific Northwest. You name it. So take advantage of Valentine's free year of roof maintenance. When you purchase a new roof, call 206-ROOFING for your estimate. 206-ROOFING. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. And they also do a ton of other things. I, for one, have been ranting on the show about the exterior of my house needing a good cleaning. And so Valentine can help you with that as well. All right, international news. So you'll recall there was this North Texas Antifa cell that they were accused of carrying out this ICE shooting attack on an ICE detention facility in Alvarado, Texas. This was back on July 4th of last year. Well, they've now been convicted, and it is the first such conviction of Antifa as sort of a terror cell, so to speak. This is from our friend Andy No. You really should follow his No Comment Substack. He covers these issues better than anyone else. All members of Texas Antifa cell convicted in first federal terrorism trial. The nine defendants are accused in the July 4th ambush on a Texas ICE facility, and they were charged with providing support to terrorists and attempted murder of federal officers. So here's where it all shook out. So it was two full days of deliberation. The trial lasted 12 days. Jurors convicted the defendants of providing material support to terrorists, rioting, conspiracy to use and carry explosives, and using and carrying explosives. So those are some significant federal charges. Benjamin Song, who prosecutors described as the ringleader, wasn't charged with the explosives-related charges, but was convicted of the more serious attempted murder of a peace officer, as well as multiple counts related to discharging a firearm during a crime of violence. Daniel Rolando Sanchez Estrada, a Mexican national, was found guilty of conspiracy to conceal documents and corruptly concealing documents or records after the attack. His partner, Marcela Ruedo, was also found guilty of conspiracy to conceal documents after telling him to hide her far-left extremist text. So these are about as serious as it gets when it comes to federal convictions. One little part in this besides their conviction that gave me joy is this paragraph from Andy. As the verdict was being read out, some of the Antifa supporters started wailing and crying, resulting in two of them being ejected from the courtroom. Defendants Zachary Evitz and Bradford Morris broke down in tears. Ringleader Benjamin Song continued smirking. But, I mean, the fact that some of them were in there crying, that is the FO part of FA. And I think that this will have such a profound impact on these far-left radical groups who, some of these people might serve life in a federal prison. And I've said before, the makeup of these Antifa extremists, you've got the couple people who are die hard. They will literally die for their cause. And then you have a bunch of loners, really, who are just looking to belong somewhere. And I think that that explanation of what happened in the courtroom shows you who's who. The ringleader, he just sat there smirking. Those are the diehard. Those are the people who are willing to go to federal prison, willing to die for their cause. And then you have the two people bursting into tears, crying like, oh my gosh, those are the hangers-on. Those are the people who got up, got caught up in something dangerous in their attempt to belong and are now going to spend some hard time in federal prison as a result. But there are still people out there who believe, and one of the reasons I say that this will probably have a profound impact on this radical left-wing extremism is for so long they've been able to get away with it. Think of how many acts of rioting, of violence, far-left people have carried out in the Seattle area over the last 10 years with nary a consequence. There were a few charges after the summer of 2020 related to people who lit cop cars on fire in downtown Seattle, but by and large, the violence was allowed to go unpunished. I mean, how many times have I been assaulted? Do you think anyone's ever faced consequences for assaulting me? I mean, police haven't even made arrests. Like, I identified a suspect in my Tukwila assault outside the ICE facility like 6 months ago, and I've never heard back. And I know I positively ID'd them. So these people have gotten away with so much. And so for that group, and I think probably 70 to 80% are these loners who want to belong to something, like very low IQ, I think this will cause some of them to think twice. The diehards will always be the diehards. They'll be willing to take federal prison time. But I think they'll have a harder time recruiting other people who see this and think, I don't want to go to federal prison. This was scary, though. Andy published this X account called FPW, Protect Trans Kids. The only appropriate response for the Prairie Land defendants is retaliation. Don't let the fascist state go unpunished. So we'll see if Antifa terror cells want to carry out any sort of attacks in retribution to what happened in Texas. FBI Director Kash Patel, Attorney General Pam Bondi responding. Kash Patel says this FBI and our partners at the Justice Department will continue tracking down criminal actors with Antifa and dismantling their operations and funding networks. Pam Bondi says today the Justice Department secured convictions on terrorism charges for 9 members of Antifa who attacked an ICE facility in Texas. Antifa is a domestic terror organization. The left has let them flourish under POTUS. We are putting them in jail. And of course, for me personally, it means a lot having been victimized by Antifa. I got an opportunity, as you know, last year to go to the White House to be part of their Antifa roundtable. And we urge the federal government to start putting these people in prison. And so I, on social media over the weekend, thank Pam Bondi and the FBI and the Justice Department for making good on the promise that they made to us last fall that they would start to prosecute them as terrorists, which is what they are. All right, a couple quick things in other states I want to discuss, just so you feel a little bit better maybe about what's happening in Washington state. It's happening in California too, as you know. We've been doing a lot of stories about millionaires and billionaires fleeing California for greener pastures. The co-founder of Uber, Travis Kalanick, is just the latest. He tells Technology Daily that he moved to Texas.
Let's just be clear. On December 18th, I moved to Texas.
Sure.
You know, great. Yeah. I don't know what's so specific about December 18th, but
I do.
Let's just say it's prior to January.
Yep.
Yeah.
I get a little bit FOMO on like these people going to Florida. I'm like, dude,
yeah, it's pretty nice.
So much Florida action. Like, come on, yeah. Homies. Like,
I know it's been a bloodbath for
like, it has just been.
Every single
Griffin
guys
out there.
Going to Florida.
But like, yeah, like every weekend this year I've had this year's in Texas.
Yeah, we don't know what's with the random eagle noise. It must be an insider thing to this bro podcast where when somebody says something funny, they make an eagle noise or something. But yeah, he says December 18th, because remember, in November in California, they're going to vote on whether to do this one time, I think it's 5% tax on billionaires. And it's retroactive to January 1st of 2026. So if you didn't get out before then, even if you left after that, you're still going to be taxed, which is crazy. I don't even know how that's legal. So he's like, I left December 18th for sure. But that just shows, I mean, the flight of wealth happening from the West Coast is historic. And there's so many states that are going to be just flush with money as a result. And it's not going to be ours, and it's not going to be California. All right, let's go to Virginia, which is dealing with its new far-left governor, Abigail Spanberger, who, of course, ran as a moderate and then immediately was like, JK, just kidding, I'm an extremist. So there was a gun bill that had previously that had been vetoed by the previous governor. And, of course, now they got a Democrat in. So Democrats are like, let's try it again. It makes it illegal to leave a firearm in a vehicle. Now, I have some thoughts on this. I mean, I don't think you should just leave. I don't think it's responsible to just willy-nilly leave a firearm in a vehicle. I don't think a responsible gun owner necessarily does that unless it's properly secured. I don't think it's your first choice to leave a firearm in a vehicle. But if you're going to carry your firearm places and you might, you know, be shopping at a business or something that doesn't allow it, to be able to lock it up in your vehicle, I mean, it's totally fine, right? In fact, my husband got a new truck, which is really handy because there's actually a safe in the truck. There's a safe built into the truck. I'm like, well, that is nice, isn't it? But anyway, so that's what the bill actually does. However, there is an additional criticism over this exemption. Line 51. The provisions of this section shall not apply to any member of the General Assembly who leaves a handgun in an unattended motor vehicle when such vehicle is parked in any parking structure reserved for members of the General Assembly. So literally, they wrote themselves an exemption. Totally horrible to leave your gun in a car unless you're a state lawmaker passing this bill. Then absolutely, you may leave your gun in your car. Isn't that just crazy? I mean, how do you do that? So you, totally fine for you to leave your gun in your car for you to go in and do your job. But anyone else who wants to leave in their gun in their car to go in and do their job or whatever else it might be, criminal. Now you're going to be a criminal. Absolutely outrageous. I hope Virginia's learning its lesson good and hard. All right, we'll get to our Daily Show poll coming up, plus some comments from the live stream and a little news on the Sonics front. I'm not going to celebrate it. I'm not celebrating it yet. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. They have events all across the state, all year round, where you can get together, talk about housing policy with either landlords or people who are involved in housing policy in one way or another. And then down in Olympia during the legislative session, they are advocating on your behalf. And so, you know, I know it can feel like you're out there alone, just struggling as a landlord, but they've got your back and they can help you on a one-on-one basis as well. So become a member today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right. I asked subscribers in our daily subscriber show poll, exclusive for subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you personally know someone who has left Washington State for political reasons? And obviously, political reasons can include a lot of things, like prices got too high here. That's political, right? Because politicians did that to the state of Washington. Nicole, do you personally know anyone who has left the state for political reasons?
Yes, I know one person that moved to Idaho, and then that's entirely to Idaho. And then I know a bunch of people that are looking for houses to move to, you know, domicile, I guess.
Yeah.
But a couple already have houses in Arizona that will be spending more time there. And then I know someone looking in Florida already searching properties. And
that someone isn't me, by the way. But
it's
might
not
be
you.
Soon.
But
yeah, I know one family that moved to Florida, more like fled to Florida to get their kids out of our horrible public school system. And then I know somebody who moved their business from Washington State just across the border in Idaho. Mm-hmm. And like literally just across the border.
Right,
and that tells you everything that you need to know. What do you think the percentage is for our subscribers? You want to guess because you haven't seen the results yet.
Oh gosh, I bet it's pretty high.
77.
Yeah.
77% of you say you personally know someone who's left Washington State for political reasons. Brenda says, I know two retired couples who moved, both moved about a year ago, one to Idaho, the other to Texas. And I know two others who are thinking about it. Steven says several clients have left the state and just as many have moved to Eastern Washington. And look, Eastern Washington does feel like a different world, but you're still bound by what they do in Olympia. And that is a bummer.
And I feel like they're being targeted.
Oh,
with all the farming stuff. I mean, they're against farming, and that's where is all the farming on the east side.
HTA says, I know several. A number of them are first responders, which I think is another reason people left, like post-2020, is people who were cops were like, I'm not doing that here, or they got fired over the vaccine mandate. So that's definitely political. KM, since we have two adult kids with disabilities, we need to find a state that would have programs for our kids. What happens to them when we pass away? Yeah, and that's true. That's a totally different consideration. Shannon, loads of them, especially the single men. It's a trans two-spirit desert out here,
great.
Shannon says.
I'm even
Where'd
more
Where'd the good
screwed.
Fellas go? I'm willing to relocate. Oh my God, Shannon, I'm looking at your profile picture. You're absolutely a stunner. Shannon Vest. Wow. Yeah, I mean, sorry, that sounded creepy. But no, you're very pretty. So yeah, you're not going to find you and Nicole.
We're screwed.
You're going to only find the trans two-spirit ones here. If you two are single, everyone's doomed. Everyone is
the
doomed.
Two-spirit one.
Two-spirit. Hey, you know what? Nicole, just stop being so picky. Date a two-spirit.
Right.
Date a two-spirit.
What am I thinking?
One day, man. The other day, woman. You don't know.
Or like animal, right? Can't
or
they
animal.
Be an animal?
They could be a wolf. You know, I actually think that'd be an exciting relationship.
I suppose.
You never know what you're going to get on any given day. All right. Some comments from the live stream. Guys Keeper says, financial refugees are loading their U-Hauls. Yeah. Mm-hmm. William Y6. In 1913, the federal government sold the income tax the same way. The Revenue Act of 1913 instituted a 1% tax on income over $3,000, $4,000 for married couples, with top rates reaching 7%. Yeah, the federal income tax began as a tax on the rich. Mm-hmm. Like, again, I'm not saying stuff that's hard to predict. I'm not saying stuff that even takes an awful lot of intelligence to conclude. Like, this is really basic stuff. Mm-hmm. We know, like, past is prologue. We can look at things that have happened. And things that are happening. So,
and you know, by the way that Bob answers that question that we played earlier in the show, he didn't say, no, I will never. He just said, ugh, if that's their only argument, then I guess they don't have a
He has said that he will not sign it. But also keep in mind, it doesn't even take effect. We're not, even if the court challenge doesn't work, even if the initiative doesn't work, it'll be 2029. Before this goes into effect. And they're not going to do it the same year and reduce it. So it'll probably be like 6 years.
Right.
And what happens in 6 years? He'll just be finishing his second term.
Yeah, new governor.
And he
so it'll be a new governor.
He doesn't have to. So, on businesses fleeing over taxes, Old Sub Sailor says, oh, you gave me $20. Supporting the revenue stream. Keep up the fight, Undivided. Thank you. You guys are so sweet. Cotty Moore says maybe he should run for mayor, the guy speaking at the Downtown Seattle Association. Yeah, John Scholes would be much better than the socialist that we got in there. Tim Ames, I would like to know how many of these people leaving are Democrat supporters that voted for all of this and now are letting the rest of us suffer from their decisions. And actually, Jesse Proudman, who we had on the show, the tech entrepreneur on Sunday, I asked him about that because he's been a Democrat. He's supported Democrats. And he, you know, basically acknowledge that and is like, you know, moving forward, because I said, are you going to move to Florida or whatever it is and bring your bad voting habits with? And he says he's still an independent, so we didn't rule out like voting for Democrats, but there's a lot of different kinds of Democrats. I mean, he supported Mark Mullett for governor. Mark Mullett never would have signed an income tax on millionaires. And so you can get a good Democrat. I don't care if you vote for Democrats, but let's vote for a sane Democrat, not a socialist, right?
Well, I think that's the problem, is Mark couldn't get enough of that party to support him. And so that's where it's going to be a battle for a while longer, because not only do you have to have a candidate, you've also got to get the party to support the candidate. Yeah. And that's really difficult right now.
Yeah. Let's see. On the school district hiding the coach's alleged sexual misconduct, Lolly, it is totally disgusting that schools are failing to report abuse. There's What reason is it, right? Like, look, as a school, wouldn't you want to say, I'm not going to have any of this on my hands? You have a school resource officer. What other reason do you have one of those other than a circumstance just as this? And I know that they're for like keeping kids safe. Okay, right. Yeah. From teachers sometimes, from staff members sometimes. So wouldn't you want to like get it off out of your hands as early as possible? Like, hey, a kid just told me that the coach was caressing their buttocks and biting their shoulder. Can you come in and deal with this? Immediately. I would literally do it immediately, just so I wasn't accused of hiding something.
Right.
And because that's what a sane adult does.
I don't understand what
it makes
here.
No sense. It's the unions.
Supported.
I think it's the unions. I think it's negotiations the unions have done when there's allegations of misconduct. And I think they just want to quash it. And then hiding it from parents until Alicia Perkins comes sniffing around and you're like, oh, we can't hide it from parents anymore. So let's send an email. It, for the sake of transparency. Good grief.
And we were just trying to get it all squared before.
Yeah,
we were just trying to make sure. It just took us a month to like make sure. Yeah.
But took us 3 weeks to write this
figure
email.
It out.
School district, Watermelon Shug. Is it the school's job to determine credibility in these situations? Just give it to the police. Right. Code writer. Seems like the officer got a confession by asking for the letter. Yeah, I mean, so Alicia Perkins says the police let him write this letter and sent it, but I want to double check on whether the police sent it to the girl, because I would be very concerned with that, because he should have no contact with the girl whatsoever. So I need to figure out what was the, maybe it was a strategy thing, maybe it's like, hey, write an apology letter to the girl, here you go,
and then they
and then it's
the
like
charges.
A confession, right? So you're right, maybe that's what's going on here, because I feel like something else is afoot with that. On the Ninth Circuit judge writing about swinging D's, Milkman calls it the Ninth Circus. Well, yeah. They'll end up with my free press case eventually, so hopefully they get it together. On the Antifa terror cell conviction, bam, reading the Bible even casually would make you wiser. Ecclesiastes 8:11, when the sentence for a crime is not quickly carried out, people's hearts are filled with schemes to do evil. Oh, wow. That is very, wow, you just pulled that out?
Deep and,
Ecclesiastes 8:11, when the sentence for a crime is not quickly carried out, people's hearts are filled with schemes to do evil. Man, maybe I should read the Bible. Speaking of, Looking Up for Jesus says, need to make an example of the terrorists. D-Man in Seattle, my God, that is so overdue. Thank God, may all Antifa see and learn. I agree. A couple of random super chats. Chuck Heller says, I would like to sponsor the Boop. You didn't Boop for Unbelievable segment anymore. I usually Boop. First of all, I usually Boop. But yes, if you want to give me $20 in the super chat every time I Boop, I'm not going to say no. Son Miller, I'm with Chuck. Okay, I'm sorry. You guys don't like change.
Too funny.
And speaking of, Daniel says, Brandy, not to change the topic, but find this my opportunity to ask you. What is this BS with changing the title from illegal aliens to non-citizen? I believe it's a small step to make it easier to allow them to vote. It's always small steps with Democrats. Yes, incrementalism.
Oh, and I love all the news coverage of it saying they've he's updated it.
Yeah, so Bob Ferguson signed a bill that updates for state statute and all this stuff that instead of alien, illegal alien, it'll say non-citizen.
But it's just part of making language offensive, right? And controlling language along with everything else they try to control.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Do you want to do the rating. Sonics?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that quick. So speaking of like what's going to happen with millionaires tax and teams, so ESPN is reporting that they're going to vote on a franchise expansion for Las Vegas and Seattle. So it's going to have its first vote. And from the ESPN report, it seemed like there was a lot of support for it. And they said that they think these franchises will immediately become like top eight in the league in terms of revenue and that they'll go for a ton of money. Now, we already know Adam Silver had a meeting with the governor where he talked about their support for bringing the Sonics back. But what did he point out was a concern? The millionaire's tax. And so the idea that that is not going to play into the value of the team is not going to play into who they can get to buy it here, because businesses are fleeing. So you're going to get some wealthy person, which is, you know, basically a business, to buy a business in the Sonics. I think they can find someone, but it's going to be much harder than maybe it would have been a year or 2 years or 5 years ago. So we'll see what happens with that. I would love to see the Sonics come back to Seattle. I would just love to see Seattle be deserving of the Sonics. That's what I would love to see. All right. Gosh, what's going on? Okay, we'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones is the guy you want to call if you're thinking about fleeing to Florida or Tennessee or Texas and you need to sell your home. Jim H. said he had a wonderful experience with Wes. He said, we packed our bags, hit the road to a new state, but we'd jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat. A giant shout out to Ebby, too, on the team for her incredible support, unwavering dedication, and tireless effort. Together, they turned our long-distance deal into a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end. I love that. So Jim's like, they got out of the state, didn't even wait to sell their house first, and then they had to deal with selling it back here, and they just said it was great. And in fact, if you want to go from Sell with Wes to Sold with Wes, go to his website, sellwithwes.com, and you can see all the listings that they've sold recently and how they've performed. So I really think that's a good way to gauge Wes's success in doing what he does. And he's just an awesome guy. So if you're looking to sell, whether you're moving across the street or across the country, and if you do move across the country, Nicole and I demand that you buy a house that has a guest house and a pool, and we will come visit. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home from sell to sold. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I'll add a boop, boop in here just to even things out. All right, Joy Reid is literally insane. I don't think that comes as a surprise, but let's hear what she's saying now.
Our regime has secret police. They have secret police. Our regime is oppressing women, taking away abortion rights, taking away women's rights in like 26 states, some states where they're trying to have the death penalty for having an abortion. They also oppress women. They have the highest rate of women who are in STEM careers. We're kicking women out of the military, out of university. We're saying that DEI means women can't be hired for high positions in the sciences. We're marginally better. And we're doing it for Christianity, they're doing it for Islam, right?
The United States, according to Joy Reid, is marginally better than Iran when it comes to women's rights. Meanwhile, the Iranian women's soccer team is probably being sent back to their, sent to their death in Iran right now. So yeah, I mean, the idea that any of these women on the left actually care about women's rights when they force women to compete against boys, force women to share locker rooms with men, and suggest that the United States is only marginally better than Iran on women's rights, where women can be killed for like offending their husbands. Absolutely insane. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm trying out new accents.
Okay.
I don't know. I think that was more like Australian. I've been watching Married at First Sight Australia, and you can barely understand what they're saying. No offense, but yeah, it's hard to understand.
I know, it's English, but when I was there, it was very hard to understand the Uber drivers.
Yes, all that, mate.
They talk so fast.
It's like, articulate, man, articulate. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we'd love for you to support our show. Undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, unless you're Australian and I just offended you, then I understand if you don't want to. Click on the banner that says support the show. And that's it. You're on your way. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.